Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hey, we're back for hour number three. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We're on till 11 o'clock because the Saints take on the 49ers in San Francisco this afternoon. Game coverage starts at 10 a.m. First Take, Steve Gell and Jeff Nowak. At 1 p.m., Bobby Hebert and Christian Garrick and Mike Dettelier, the Bud Light countdown to kickoff. Game time is 3:25 with Deuce and Mike. Turn down the sound. And turn up Deuce and Mike Hoss. Deuce the Moose and the Deuce and the Moose, right? Albert, okay. We were sort of jam-packed today with guests, but I wanted to elaborate on this. You said book it. The Saints are gonna win today. I want to find out why.
Well, let me tell you, I think our quarterback play has improved substantially. I think they're getting more and more comfortable with him. He had 149.5 quarterback rating last week.
Yes.
You know, it just goes unnoticed because, you know, he's made some bad passes, thrown some interceptions, but I think Dalton's stepping up and he's putting the team in position to win the game. There were five players that are questionable. Questionable means they will likely play. So if we can get our defensive line in order with Cam Jordan and Davenport, you know, all of a sudden, you know, and they even were talking about maybe a quarterback playing, you know. So if that all happens, all of a sudden, you know, we're a pretty good team. And we're not the Saints team that we've been, you know, struggling and failing and, you know, people taking advantage of our weaknesses. You know, listen, that's what good coaches do. You know, where's the mismatch? Where's the weakness right now? We're going to take advantage of that. When you got a bench player starting because they have to, and you know he's not a you know a stud like our you know starter is, then you're going to have some breakdowns. You're going to have some issues. But I think, you know, look, San Francisco's been on a bit of a roll lately, but, you know, they've only won six games. They've lost four. So it's not like they're world beaters. And I just think I think this is a trap game for them. They're thinking, you know, looking ahead.
Trap.
It's a non-divisional game for them. I like the same chance.
So you would say, and if you were Buddy D, you say, take the 8 points. Take the 8.5. And the Saints.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think they win straight up.
If you bet the money line, you'd bet $34 to win 10. So there you go. I think the formula here on out is 70% Dalton, 30% Taysom. I also – now, if the Saints do win and they get to 5-7, then, you know, that division is so bad that they're in the conversation again. Now, you know.
This is a bigger game for the Saints than it is for the 49ers. And so if, you know, and if it's all about coaching getting them up for the right games, right? And if it's explained to them, hey, look, we're one win away, like you said, from being in that conversation, from all of a sudden having a chance, you know, to really realistically make the postseason.
Well, so, I think the thing that if the Saints are going to make it interesting, and by no means am I saying that, you know, that's probably going to happen, but if they're going to make it interesting, the three things that they need to do is, one, turnovers. Two, their high-priced players need to start playing according to their salary. You have a lot of the higher-priced players, you know, the Kamaras, the Jordans, the, you know, Lattimores. They're performing okay, but they're not performing superstar as if they're being in accordance with their salary. And,
right,
you know, the problem with the Saints organizationally is the credit card is now due. You know, they every year they were deferring their salary cap to the following year. It's like getting a new credit card, saying you're buying another, you know, 12 months to pay off your debt. But the reckoning is coming. And, you know, that's part of the reason they traded C.J. Gardner was because they couldn't afford him and they need some draft picks. So the reckoning is coming. But, you know, you can make it interesting. And in the playoffs, you start all over again. And I don't even want to say the playoff word. There are three games. They got to win three more games in a row before we could even seriously talk about that. But, you know, part of the, if you're in the playoffs, you start a new season, anything can happen. And, I don't think this team has, you know, is going to make it. And I don't think, even if they did, they wouldn't. I don't think they would be able to do much in the playoffs. But, you know, but let's see. We'll make it interesting. If you ask me,
well, think
after
about
the Florida,
they've got, got three more games left against division rivals.
Right, right. They can make up a lot of ground.
They can win those three, right? And so there's no reason why they can't get in there and make a playoff run. But I think it starts today. I think, you know, you get a little too far behind unless, of course, everybody else in the division loses today. But yeah, I mean, getting the players back, I mean, they're still a little bit soft on the offensive line. They've got some injuries there. But you know, those guys are getting better and they're getting more comfortable with each other. And so, I mean, if we can get a little running game going offensively, I think if we get our defensive players back, and again, they're not doubtful, they're questionable. And so if they come back and play, you know, all of a sudden we got we can win a close, low scoring game is what I'm looking for.
Tampa plays Cleveland Browns. And Tampa's, they're a warm weather team. I don't, I'll check the weather in Cleveland. And also the Falcons play, the Falcons are playing the Commanders. So, you know, that's who else to pull for, but the division's so bad. And I don't think Tom Brady won a lucky game against the Rams. I don't know that he's going to finish strong. I think he's in danger of any time falling off the cliff, you know, as far as diminishing skills at 45 years old. So, you never know. You never know. But all right. So I wanted to change direction for the next 45 minutes. You know, a lot of what we talked about for the last year and couple of months is Hurricane Ida. Albert, any new updates you want to talk about for the listeners?
What I've been getting more than anything else is people have gotten their money, right, or some of their money or most of their money, whatever the case may be, and now they're hiring contractors, and the contractors don't know what they're doing. They're not coming back to finish. They're not, you know, they're messing this up, messing that up. And people are calling me with all of these questions about, okay, what do I do? How can I terminate this guy? He's asking me for more money, but, you know, he's not even close to finishing the first half of the work. And so how do I deal with that? What do I do? And the biggest answer is you've got to have the right contract going in, right? So there's a couple of things people have to know from a legal perspective. Number one, a contract is the law between the parties. So if you sign a contract, that contract becomes law between you and the person you signed the contract with. And so the courts are going to interpret that contract just as it's written, if it's clear and unambiguous. And so even if it's slanted so much in favor of the contractor, which most of their contracts will be, the courts are going to say, look, it's not the duty of the court to get somebody out of a bad deal they made. The function of the court is to interpret a contract as it is written. So you need to make sure on the front end going in that your contract with your contractor is at least fair and protects you and gives you some protections and some outs in the event that they're not meeting up with their side of the bargain, right? So many of these contracts, you don't see any provision in there for a completion date, right? So what that does is that gives them the opportunity to go out and make money, you know, make hay while the sun shines, right? I'm going to go get 50 contracts because, you know, 50 houses in this neighborhood need to be fixed up. Well, I don't have the subcontractors or the support or the whatever to handle 50 contracts, but I'm going to sign everybody up. And they're just going to have to wait till I can get to it because now they're locked in with me to a contract. So that's the mentality of these contractors. And they think, oh, yeah, we can, you know, we'll lock them up and then they can't terminate us. Well, keep in mind, you can terminate any contractor at any time. The question is, are you doing it for cause? And if you're doing it for cause, then you can terminate them without any repercussions. If you're not doing it for cause, if it's the reason, you know, you just, they're doing a great job and everything, you know, you just want to get rid of them, then there may be some penalty issues. There may be some things in the contract. You might have to owe them their profits, for instance, even if you do terminate them. So there are a lot of things you need to deal with. If you want your contract reviewed, you can call us. We can do that for you. And there's some things we can put in there. In terms of a completion date, you know, in terms of a draw schedule, you know, you don't give them 50% up front because then they're not coming back. They've got half of your money and they've done zero of the work. So, you know, so there are a lot of things you need to think about. And you know, we'll be happy to help you with that.
Yeah. What are, I guess, some of the things that you see that a lot of contracts are lacking to protect the homeowner? What provisions do you see most often?
Well, first and foremost is you know, the pricing might be one thing. You know, again, I get it. Look, we represent a lot of contractors as well. We put provisions in those contracts that protect the contractor in the event of a you know, price increase, a substantial price increase in materials. You know, it's, they don't want to quote a fixed contract price, and then all of a sudden the materials went up 30%. I mean, they're not in it to lose money. And you know, as a homeowner, you need to understand that. So, you know, a lot, that's been happening a lot with some of these contracts, and nobody just thought to put it into a contract and, you know, anticipate that. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the issues. Another issue is a draw schedule, right? You want to make sure that your payments, your scheduled payments, are done with certain milestones, right? So let's say that your house had to be gutted, right? Well, as soon as you get a rough-in inspection, a past rough-in inspection for your plumbing and electrical, then you owe me XYZ, and you figure out those percentages and y'all work those out. And then, you know, next thing, when you got to, okay, to close the walls, when they close the walls and the sheetrock's done, okay, we'll get another one for that. And then when the painting's done and the flooring's done, and then you want to withhold 5 or 10% until the punch list is completed, because you'll never get them back if you pay them 100% and they still have things to do. You know, now they're reputable contractors that have been in business a long time, and I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about a lot of those carpetbaggers that are coming in from all different states, and they're trying to get this work done. You know, people will call me and ask me, hey, look, you know, look, should I sue this guy? What do I need to do? And I said, where is he? What is he? Oh, yeah, he's from Georgia. I'm like, you'll spend all this money trying to sue this guy to collect this money back. And then you got to go try to collect it in Georgia if he's got it. You know, a lot of these guys have a cell phone and a truck. They have no tools. They have nothing. They hire subcontractors to do their work. And then, you know, they form this LLC. And then, oh, sorry, the LLC's out of money and they're gone. And unfortunately, that's the sad reality after a storm. People are just desperate to get back in their homes. And so, you know, the good, reputable Louisiana licensed long-term contractors that are here are usually very, very booked up. And so you've got to find somebody to get the work done. And unfortunately, you know, you're kind of stuck at the mercy of these folks that you have nothing, you know, nothing about. They have no track record here. Many of them aren't even licensed. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, and that's just the landscape right now. And it was the landscape after Katrina. But you know, the best thing you can do is at least try to protect yourself in terms of holding on to your money throughout the progress of the job, to where you're not overpaying them. The other thing you want to make sure you get is lien waivers. Basically, you're going to get all your subs to sign a lien waiver, and then I'll pay you, which means they've agreed that they can't lien the job because they've been paid by you. And so those are the things you want to, you know, definitely protect yourself on. And there's a myriad of other things as well.
That's right. So the bottom line is, if you paid 50% to an out-of-state contractor and he's not coming back, or not returning your calls, it's not a good situation. You want to stay out of those.
It's not, unfortunately. Yeah, so protect yourself from that on the front end.
All right, let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal, and WWL, AM, FM, Odyssey.com. You know, also, too, in connection with Hurricane Ida, a lot of individuals used public adjusters. And a lot of times they went through the appraisal process. And in the appraisal process, what happens is one of the parties invokes appraisal, which means the homeowner would appoint an appraiser, the insurance company would appoint an appraiser. They see if they could come to a consensus as to what the damages are, and if they can, an umpire makes a determination as to damages. Now, a lot of homeowners who went through the appraisal process still may have a separate claim under bad faith or extra contractual claims, as stated, meaning they had bad faith in the sense of you might have had a situation where you had a Hurricane Ida claim. Your public adjuster might have made a claim for $150,000. The insurance company only paid $5,000 after deductible. And the appraisal comes back and it's $100,000. Well, the $100,000 would be tendered to you, but there could be a claim under bad faith for not paying the enough money soon enough, basically, or within undisputed payments within 30 or 60 days. And, you know, there would be a claim as to whether a lot more than in our example, $5,000 should have been paid when received the demand from maybe a public adjuster or a contractor for $150,000. And that would be a separate and distinct claim that you may have against the insurance company. It would help you recoup some of your cost that you had to pay to do an appraisal or pay a public adjuster or an attorney or what have you. So, Albert, if you could talk a little bit about that, you know, the bad faith claims that, you know, certain people who have already received their money from appraisal. Yeah.
We are reviewing a lot of claims right now, many of which have been paid but not necessarily settled, which means you did not sign a release, right? So an insurance company has a duty to tender. You got to forgive me. I'm outside on my brother-in-law's porch. But the adjuster might not have paid of the full amount of the claim, but let's say your damages were $100,000 and they paid you $5,000 initially or $10,000 initially, and then they came back and said, you know, after you've gotten your own appraisal done or contract or whatever, and then your damages are $100,000. Well, they come back and say, all right, we'll give you $80,000. So they want to pay you $80,000. Well, as long as they pay you the $80,000 and don't ask you to sign a release, they have a duty to pay what's fair. So they may have reinspected it, and their inspector, second adjuster, field adjuster that came out, he said, yeah, it was worth $80,000. So now they paid you $80,000. Well, when they pay you, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 the first time around and pay you $80,000 the second time around, it's pretty clear that they did not adjust the claim fairly the first time around when they only – you know, showed up with $5,000 or $6,000, $10,000 worth of damages, when in fact, you know, once they sent a competent adjuster out, it was very close to your adjuster's numbers. And so obviously, you know, and then they pay you $80,000. Well, with that in mind, there's a Fourth Circuit case that's that a hurricane related type case. And it basically said the same thing. So it would defeat the purpose of the bad faith laws of the insurance code to allow an insurance company just to go out and put a little money on the table on a claim, and then you've got to either hire a lawyer, hire a public adjuster, hire a contractor, somebody to come out and show what your true damages are, and then they come back out and agree with you, and it's substantially higher. Then they're in bad faith, you know. So what you'll do is you'll take the difference between that initial payment and at least the subsequent payment that they agreed to, right? And you make a claim that, hey, look, this is how much you owe. You owe a 50% penalty on this amount plus attorney's fees. So, you know, assuming my $80,000 scenario, that's another $70,000. Difference that they paid you, so you would be entitled to $35,000 in penalties plus a percentage attorney's fee on that amount because it was bad faith. From an appraisal process, it's even easier because now, you know, you've got a third party, if the umpire gets involved, that's going to kind of make a decision as to what it is, and if they grossly underpaid you the first time out, then you know, then that's an issue. If the insurance company's appraiser gets somewhere close to that, you know, third party appraiser, or that umpire's number, even that is a significant difference. If that is a significant difference from their initial payment, then they're in bad faith. I mean, the law is pretty clear, and you know, we settle cases all the time, and you hear the defense lawyers go, "Man, I hate that." It's called a gigi, is the plaintiff's name in that case that I'm talking about. And I mean, I was like, man, I hate the Agigi case. You know, it messes me up all the time. You know, we said, well, you know what, if that's the case, tell your insurance companies to hire people that are competent the first time out. They've got CAT adjusters all over the country that can get, that's all they do for a living. They should be better trained. I remember taking depositions after Katrina in different cases I was handling. And I asked this lady, I said, you know, how long have you been adjusting? How long have you been adjusting claims? She said, oh, only since Hurricane Katrina. I said, really? What did you do before that? What was your occupation? She said, I was a school teacher and decided I wanted to make some more money. I said, have you ever had any construction experience? You ever built anything yourself? You ever worked for any kind of? Nope. So here it was. Some lady took a 2-week course in claims adjusting, and she was out there adjusting my client's commercial building. And it was, you know, and look, I get it. I represented insurance companies at the beginning of my career. I was in-house for them. I get that they've got to at least, you know, try to put somebody on the streets to get the an estimate done and make that initial payment within 30 days. And, you know, and it's thousands and thousands of claims going everywhere. It's bedlam. Believe me, I get what they're going through. But at the same time, you know, they have a duty, I think, to at least treat you fairly. You know, if they come up with $45,000 and then next time $80,000, okay, we missed a few things. That's reasonable. But to go from 10 to 80 is crazy. And this lady didn't know what she was doing. She had no experience. And some third-party claims adjusting company hired her and just threw her on the streets. And she just didn't know what she was doing. And you'll see that over and over again. And that's why you'll get 4 or 5 different adjusters, you know, because this one's leaving and that one's rehandling. You know, we're going to reassign this file. It's craziness. But at the same time, they owe a duty to you under a first-party insurance claim to adjust your claim fairly and timely. And if they don't do either, then you're entitled to penalties. So like Doug said, if you had a public adjuster that, you know, got you some money or you went to the appraisal process, but you did not sign a release, you just got a check, then let us review it. We'll review it. We'll look at the timeline. We'll look at when you submitted your initial claim, when they came out and paid that first claim, when, you know, when you submitted your supplement, how soon afterward they reinspected the loss, how much they paid you the second time. All of these things factor into the good faith, bad faith handling of the claim. And we're doing a bunch of those right now.
Okay. Yeah, you give us a call at 504-837-1304, 504-837-1304, if you have any questions on that. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Eileen. Hey, Eileen, what you have for us?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm sorry, still. Good morning.
Good morning, yes.
Good morning. My main concern is back in 1999, we purchased a home here in Mandeville. And in 2006, my husband passed away. And since that time, I remarried and subsequently paid off the home, the mortgage. All of paperwork for the mortgage is in my current name. I am the sole owner of my home, and it is in my name. And so I took all this paperwork to the courthouse and said, hey, I need to have my property sales tax bill that comes every December changed to my new name. And they said, we can't do it for you. You need to have a notarized document. And it can't just be by a notary. It has to be drawn up by a lawyer saying that you are who you say you are and that you own the home and it's paid off. And I don't know what kind of lawyer to pursue.
Would you need a succession lawyer? What you're going to have to do is, I think they'd probably require you to have the property transferred from your name. Or did your husband have a will?
No.
When he didn't. Okay. So when you purchased the property, were y'all married?
Yes.
Yeah, it's both y'all's name. Okay. Well, then what they may require is one of two things. They may require you to do a succession whereby you basically state your husband died. He did not have a will, in that and have a judgment of possession that would state that you own half the property and you have use of your husband's half of the property for the remainder of your life.
Okay,
and
that so has already all been done.
That's been done? Okay, well then.
Did y'all have any children? Did y'all have any children before he passed away?
Yes.
And okay, so if he did not have a will. If he did not have a will, then those children would come in possession of their half or his half of the house in what's called naked ownership. So they would own it. You would be the usufructuary of it. And so, and so now, you know, now what you want to do now that it's paid off, you've paid it off, you want to have it placed in your name, but your new married name, correct?
Correct.
Okay. But your children will still have, they have ownership as well. They're still listed on the title to the property.
Correct.
Yes. I don't know why you can't just, I guess, go with a marriage certificate to a lawyer's office and have them prepare a document that says, you know, I was Eileen Smith, now I'm Eileen Jones, and I've, you know, remarried and just put the house in your name. Like I said, some would say who you, it's called.
That's what I want to do, and that's what I've been advised to do. I just don't know what kind of lawyer to go to.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you could find a lawyer. Doug, you can handle that on the North Shore. And it's not an affidavit of identity. There's a term of art for it. But basically, it says, yeah, I am who I say I am. And, I've, you know, she's presented a marriage certificate to me. She's now married to such and such. And her legal name is X. She's presented an identification to me. And, you know, this is who she is. And she was formerly this person, owner of this property. Boom. And then you just go file that with the clerk's office. Yeah.
Any civil lawyer could do that, probably. Most any civil lawyer.
And you said
lawyer.
You have an office here on the North Shore?
Yes, we do. We have an yes, we do. It's Nico and Sinceri in the North Shore in Mandeville. Yeah. And Michelle Demarest, my wife, is so you can call there. 504-624-9697. She can prepare that affidavit.
Please, I'm sorry.
985. 625-9697. 985-624-9697. Ask for Michelle, and she could do that.
Well, thank you so much. I will.
All right. Thanks
much. I would be doing that tomorrow. Thank you all for your time. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
So that affidavit would be like a lineup card in baseball terms, saying who you are,
exactly.
Who you were married to, how many children you have.
Or something, or I forget what the term of art is, but yeah, it's just basically this is who I, you know, this is who she says she is. I'm hearing these claims adjuster, public adjuster commercials on TV, on the radio and TV and everywhere. I got to tell you, some are very reputable and good. Others, there's one I'm fighting with right now. They have a claim in my client's lawsuit because, you know, they handled the claim and wanted to refer her to some Galveston attorney to handle her lawsuit because they couldn't go any further with it. And, you know, they came up with this really high estimate. And then the adjuster for the insurance company said, well, we're not going to pay that. And so they had to hire a lawyer. And so the clients came to me and said, no, I want to hire a local attorney. Well, they showed me this contract. It was unbelievable how locked in they are to this public adjusting company. They charge $500 an hour to do all this work, but then they're going to cap it at 10%, which is basically a way of trying to get around a contingency fee contract, which the Louisiana Supreme Court said is illegal. And then they want to refer you to this Galveston law firm that wants to charge you 35% of the claim for a property damage claim, plus the costs. So now you're paying 10% to your public adjuster, who's hooked up with the Galveston law firm, and they want to get 35% of your claim. So now you're looking at losing 45% of your claim.
Half your claim with the cost. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's great. And if the insurance company was not in bad faith, then you know, you don't get any attorney's fees and penalties or anything like that. And so you lose 50% of your claim. And, oh, by the way, your public adjuster contract, we get 10% of everything. So if they're going to pay you $30,000 and we got a $100,000 claim, we get $10,000. We get 10% of the first $30,000. They already paid you. I'm telling you, read the contract before you sign up with a public adjuster. Read it carefully and know what you're getting into. And I got to think, at this point, we're probably a year and a half in. The days of the public adjuster are over. It's time to hire a lawyer and actually file a lawsuit. Right. They're not going to get you any closer to where you need to be. And if they can't, they can't enforce it. You got to hire a lawyer anyway.
No enforcement mechanism. All right, here to music. Let's go to a break. Dixon Terry, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We're back for our last segment right after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Dixon Terry, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. All things legal. Stay tuned for the first take with Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak as soon as we get out. For the 11 o'clock hour for the first take at 1 p.m., Bobby and Christian and Mike Dettillier, Bud Light countdown to kickoff. Game time is 3:25 with Deuce and Mike Haas. Turn down the sound. Sync up Mike and Deuce for the Saints San Francisco game. And Albert, you giving the official, you're coming out on a limb and you saying the Saints are going to win straight up. That is a bold.
Saints first one. Low scoring.
What do you think? I mean, they got Christian McCaffrey now, and Mike Shanahan using Christian McCaffrey, and Samuel. He is having fun with that. So,
it's a good team, but I'm telling you, when we're healthy, I don't know of a better defense in the NFL. I mean, you know, we're in the top five probably in terms of defense. So, you know, our linebackers, I mean, you know, well, no, we're not because we hadn't been healthy, but it looks like we're going to get two of our starting defensive linemen back. Well, that makes everybody better when you got a pass rush, right? When you can tackle, you know, Werner, he's another guy. I mean, he was the fifth leading tackler.
Is he coming back? Or is he still out?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything about him on the injury report. So I'm guessing he's back.
Caden Ellis has filled in very well for him.
He stepped up and played well, you know. So, you know, it's got a lot of young guys that have gotten some minutes. You know, the cornerback that was taking – what's his name's place? He had some bad plays early on, but he's come along. And the rookie, I mean, he's played very well. So – I like our defense. If we can give Dalton a little time back there and have a little bit of a running game on offense.
So what you're saying is take your cryptocurrency and put it on the Saints.
That's right. Take the Saints and the points.
Saints and the points, eight and a half. I don't know, man. You're very optimistic.
But I'm just looking at it realistically. San Francisco's looking past this game. They think the Saints are terrible. And they're not. They're a few points away. So.
All right. Sounds good. All right. We'll be back next week. All things legal. We'll be back on next 2 weeks. Saints play Tampa Bay next Monday night. So y'all have a great week. Go Saints. And we'll see you next week on All Things Legal. Have a great weekend.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.